Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite. Introducing WonderSuite from bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 109 of the Awakened Soul Podcast. We are joined this week by Christian Brianna from Best Friends Talking Shit and Them Chakras. And we get into a great discussion about what it really means to be a part of the culture. And what do we mean when we say the culture? We also talk about how allies can also help support the culture, but not imitate the culture. And we also talk about the Little Mermaid controversy. And we get into the discussion about how some of the attributes of Black women are kind of watered down to attitude and other things, but how sometimes Black men appreciate those same attributes that they attack Black women for in other races. So that's a very interesting conversation. And forgive me, for any first-time listeners, I'm your host, CEO Hayes. I'm the host of the Awakened Soul Podcast. You can follow me at CEO Hayes. You can follow the podcast at Awakened Soul Pod. On every social media platform, we are part of the Breaks Media. So make sure you go to thebreaksmedianetwork.com, where you can find this podcast as well as several other lovely Black and beautiful podcasts. But enough of that. Let's go ahead. Let's let AJ take it away. We're going to get into the mind of Hayes right after this. AJ, give it to him.
The following is a Breaks Media podcast.
You are now listening to the best podcast in the world, The Awakened Soul, hosted by my daddy.
All right, so we are in the dark and twisted, crazy-ass place that is the mind of CEO Hayes, and on this week's In the Mind of Hayes segment, so really what I want to talk about, we all have seen probably over the course of the weekend all of the videos and the pictures and the posts and everything coming out of the Essence Fest this year. And what I will say that, and, you know, women, it seems like they all go to the Essence Fest together, and it's these building of sisterhood moments, and it's great to see. The Essence Fest has always been that weekend is kind of looked at as the, as I wouldn't say the it event to go to, but you see, you just see all the women just participating in this event and really loving it and really enjoying it. And it's set back. And, you know, we kind of talked about a couple of weeks ago, the importance of getting out the crib, going out and having the moments to build your character, to build, just add to your, like your culture, to go out and travel and do these things. And, you know, seeing that and it being the Essence Fest, weekend really brought all that kind of conversation home to me. And it just, the importance of having those bonding moments, which whether it's your kids, whether it's your family, whether it's with your friends, sometimes fuck, even traveling by yourself, and just having the time to really experience something new, but also have that break away from everyday life to kind of reset your mind. Traveling is important. Going out and experiencing new things is important. And so I feel like our culture, the Black culture, we're really starting to, I think, see the benefits of that. And not just by benefits, I don't mean just going out and just doing something different. I don't mean just saying, oh, well, we're going to go turn up and have a drink a weekend and just drink XYZ. I mean, really going out and just separating yourself. And sometimes it's not even about what you do when you get there. Sometimes it's just about getting out and getting into something new. And, you know, I've had the benefit to be able to travel around the world, to live in other countries, experience other cultures firsthand, and really engulf myself in it basically my whole life. And I think because that was just a part of my life for so long, I really didn't understand how that benefited and helped build me as a person until I got older and start. Like, I see people who literally have saved up their whole lives for something that was in my backyard, like the Sistine Chapel. Like that, like the Sistine Chapel was literally like a 40-minute walk from where I lived growing up. The Colosseum was like just as close. So these are things that I have gotten to see and really engulf in that I didn't appreciate now until I'm getting to this place where I'm in my 30s and my peers are really, really saving up to go and see these things. But I saw them every day. So, you know, just the Essence Fest weekend just kind of put me back in that mindset of wanting to talk about the importance of traveling and getting out and just really doing some stuff. Like, let's really do some stuff. So I only have one other thing that's going to be in this segment for this week. That's the NBA free agency. I'm not even going to list all the deals that have happened. I don't talk about sports as much as I used to. It seemed like for a while, like when I first started this podcast, the Chicago Bulls were like in the opening segment every week. And I kind of gotten away from talking about sports. But the NBA free agency has just been so wild and all the movement that's been going on. And, you know, as a fan of basketball, as a fan of sports in general, it's good to kind of see how everything shook out, because now, whereas we knew it was going to be the Golden State Warriors in the finals every single year, we knew that they were going to win the title, barring injury, like kind of what happened this year. But now there are legitimately six or so teams that you can see, depending on how the chips fall and depending on how they congeal and injuries and everything going on, that legit have a chance at a title. And, you know, KD is going to be out all of next season. Clay is probably going to be out a big chunk of the season as well, if not the full season. So that affects Brooklyn and Golden State. But like the Lakers, the Sixers, the Bucks, hell, the Clippers, which, yeah, we'll talk about it at some point. You go and check out Technical Foul. I can't wait to hear them talk about it. The Clippers and how that all shook out. And, you know, it Houston, if they get their fucking shit together. But it's good as a fan of sports. Yeah, it's great to see when the super teams come together. But I think some of the best times are when you don't have a clear-cut favorite. And, you know, even, you know, I think the Clippers now kind of the favorite as far as like in Vegas to win the title. But even then, you can it's not going to be a easy road from, like, they're not heads and shoulders standing miles above everyone else, kind of like how Golden State was the last 5 years or so. So it's really going to, for my sports fans, this NBA season is going to be a special one. And, you know, it, by that, 2K is going to be special this year, too, because people are going to be online. It's not going to be that clear-cut favorite team. So it's just, it's really good to see the league kind of get back to this. And it was just, it was so crazy. And, you know, there's always one or two teams that become threats that you may not have been able to guess or see it when the season started. And it's probably going to be a couple of those this year too. So it's just going to be an interesting time. I don't want to kind of, I know there's so many people who listen to this podcast that don't listen to sports. So I'm not going to stay on it too long, but I am a fan of basketball and just all this happening is just, I had to talk about it a little bit. So we're going to go ahead. We're going to get into our first break. When we come back, we're jumping right into the conversation with Christian Brianna. And this, like I said, this one is a really good one. I'll see you guys right after this.
You are now rocking with socially unacceptable. Socially unacceptable. You are now rocking with socially unacceptable. Socially unacceptable.
That was hard.
That was kind of dope.
That was hard as fuck.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a first-time guest on the Awakened Soul. It's a first-time guest as far as you actually being here interacting with me, but your voice has been on the podcast a few different times. So we have one of the co-hosts of Best Friends Talking Shit and solo host of Dim Chakras. We have Christian is in the building. What's going on?
Peace and blessings to you, King. How are you?
I am golden. I have no complaints at all in life. How are you doing?
I'm strong.
You're strong?
I'm strong. I'm
here. All right. Good. I'm glad to hear that. How was your holiday?
It was good. I don't really celebrate 4th of July, so.
Well, I know. None of us. I don't. And that's the thing, too. You know, it's so many posts and everything about celebrating 4th of July. I really don't think we celebrate 4th of July. We just use it as a time to get together and eat.
That was just an excuse for me to be off for 2 days.
There
so
you go.
I'm cool with it.
Yeah, there you go. So before we get into it, because this is your first time officially being here, we've got a dope topic. I know I said it at the top of the show, listeners, but we're going to get into it. But I want to talk about your projects because you have a lot going on, both on and off recording. So first, we're going to get into your podcast, Best Friends Talking Shit. Let's start there because that is kind of what I think everyone will know you for first, even though Dim Chakras, I have a lot to talk to you about there. But tell us about how Best Friends Talking Shit and how that got started and everything.
So my best friend, Kiara, Kiara J. Monet, we talk all the time on FaceTime for just ratchet conversation. And a lot of the time it's pretty dope conversation. It's a lot of reflection. We're very honest with one another. And one day she was just like, let's take the FaceTime call to Instagram. And I was like, okay. And we took it to Instagram. And then people were just like, can I catch it again? Like, if I miss this, can I catch it again? And we were just like, I don't know. We basically somebody, you know, caught on to us and was just like, hey, we'd love to put you on the network. We were on the network for a little bit doing that. And then that didn't work out. And then we just decided to go solo. And we've just been rocking out ever since.
It's available as a podcast and video, right?
Mm-hmm. So you can catch us every Monday and Wednesday at 7:30 live on Periscope and YouTube. And then every like Thursday or Friday is normally when the audio goes up.
Okay. So like doing something that's primarily a video format, because, you know, a lot of us are podcasters and we don't typically utilize video the correct way, at least in my opinion. I think as podcasters, we do focus on audio. Video is kind of an added throw-in, and I feel like it's not always utilized the best way possible. So as someone who focuses kind of on the video first, the podcast secondly, what's the difference that you see with the video format versus like what you do with Dim Chakras strictly on audio?
I think it's just the the fact is, like, you have to be more aware of things. So because you're alive, so those things that people can see, like, see you actually doing. Mm-hmm. If this was just something that we were recording and we were able to kind of edit it out, it would be one thing. But again, it's live. We also have, like, people who will chime in, like, comment. So it's interactive. So we have that portion of it. The recording part of it is really the easy part, at least for me, because I don't have to do much. Like, open and honest, like, I don't have to wear a bra, I don't have to put earrings in, I don't have to do, you know, I don't have to do stuff like that. But when you're recording live, those are things you have to take into consideration. How does my hair look? Am I, you know, putting on makeup? Am I not putting on makeup? Making sure your setup is okay, which was something that early on we were just kind of like sitting around, you know, background, had kids running around and everything else. So it's that. And then just kind of being able to see yourself, it adds an added feel to things as well, because people can kind of relate, especially in those times where we're having more like deeper conversations. You can see the tears. We're cussing each other out, giving each other the finger, like you can see it. So
That's dope. Video is something I'm trying to figure out myself on how to use the credit. I basically just use it for promotion. But yeah, what you guys do is dope. Kiara is Kiara's like that cousin who, like, you wait to see at the family get together because you know they're gonna shoot it straight every single time. So you guys have a dope chemistry. Now I want to flip the script, because them chakras, as someone who loves deeper content and loves, you know, thought-provoking stuff like what I try to do here, it's good that you get both sides of you with BFTS and them chakras. But, like, first of all, explain the name. I know what it means, but explain it for anyone who's not hip.
So them chakras is a play on your actual chakras, which are, there's 7 points in your body through your spine. So, and it actually runs through your brain. So from your brain down to your brainstem, and then from your brainstem down all the way to like your butt bone, are your chakras. And when they're misaligned, it causes different things to kind of be misaligned within yourself. So I call myself them chakras because I'm not your typical spiritual female. Like, I'm very in tune with myself, but I'm like, I sage my house to like trap music. I'm that person, like, along with chakras and twerk something. Like, that's who I am. So them chakras is just a play on that. Like, I'm a very aligned female, but like, if I gotta get out of line, like, I most definitely will. I'm just that's me. Like, it's just that's me in total. Like, them chakras, like, that's who I think.
You just named this episode, this title of this episode is officially sage and trap music. That's the name of this episode. But with them chakras, like, I from the first episode to this most recent one, you can see kind of how you're developing how you want, because you, with every podcaster, the first couple episodes are really you trying to figure it out, and you start progressing as you go, and you're starting to see the refinement of what you want to do. What, speak to that, like, what, when that took place in your mind, when that flip switched and that clarity came, how did that make you feel?
Like I was doing something right. I talk a lot, like a whole lot, and to record myself and for there to be some type of content behind it, and it's something that I can get behind, something that I'm comfortable with. And again, it's something totally different from BFTS. So to be that part of myself, and then for it to be received in the way that it is, and it's finally being received in the manner that I intend for it to, that's how it was. The first episode was just me talking. Like, I was just in a really weird place spiritually. And then over time, as it started to come to me, like, I was having these conversations with myself, but when I started to like talk, and I was just like, oh no, like, Four Kings and the Shadow Work is probably one of my most proud moments in my life, because that's something that I'm really passionate about. So things that I'm passionate about that I can have relate to other people. Mm-hmm. And that's like my ultimate goal, is to get more Black people in tune with themselves, to be able to do that, and for it to pay off the way that it has so far, thus far, even in conversations with others. That's how I know that I'm doing it right.
Do you think, because me as a listener, I would say that it seemed like that flip switched to you on the Father's Day episode. Do you think fair? Like, that, that conversation is what was like, all right, I want to keep this vibe going. Yeah. All right, that's what's up. Which, go check out the Father's Day episode for any listeners if you haven't checked it out. But to get off podcasting, you're also a motivational speaker. You do things for women's empowerment. Let's speak to your other project and other things that you're doing. Let's speak to that.
So I have When She Speaks, which is supposed to happen in September, fingers crossed, which will be a DMV event, which is just more so a conversation for women. It's just we're talking about everything, just trying to get women to understand that you have a voice and that people will listen. So that's what I'm really focused on. We have the Feeble as Fortune event that Kiera and I do together, where we go into the inner city of Baltimore. Last time we did it was 100 spaghetti dinners. So we're trying to figure out how we can one up ourselves with that. You have the live show in the end of this month, but we're actually going to do a Feeble as Fortune while we're down there, because okay. we're going down Wednesday. So probably Thursday, we'll probably do like 50 dinners, because we don't really know what the homeless community is like down there. Mm-hmm. So we kind of got to feel it out Wednesday. But Thursday, we will definitely be doing that. And then that's basically it. Just a lot of research, because I have a child support episode that I want to record. I'm an enforcement agent for child support. So that gets a lot of that's where a lot of the inspiration comes from, to be honest.
Okay.
So it is that's basically it. I don't know. I really don't. I pay attention to my projects, but I don't talk about my projects.
Yeah. You're a shower, not a talker, which is fine. Yeah. And I'm only going to bring it up 'cause you mentioned it, 'cause I wasn't going to go there, but because you brought it up, you work in child support, you're a child support enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
How many times, let's just say a month, do you have to go home and really not talk to anyone before you decompress? Because I can imagine that's probably one of the most stressful jobs that you can possibly have.
In a month. If I could break it down to do the math, maybe 12 times a month, because probably 3 or 4 times a week. I see some of the hardest cases because I'm an enforcement agent. You see the intake side of it. Somebody comes in, they're trying to get child support. You see the establishment portion of it. Either dad shows up or mom shows up or one person doesn't show up. You see the fights. But the enforcement portion of it is where you actually have to talk to these people and figure out either why you're not paying, why you can't pay, or why do you want this other person to pay. And those conversations sometimes are just really hard.
I bet. Yeah. But let's try to move, because we already got some deep stuff to get into. So we're going to try to move off that. Anyone who has child support questions, definitely reach out to Christian. She's a very good resource for that, as being on that side of it. So definitely reach out. But let's get into the topics for today. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is actually a clip of Denzel Washington speaking on The Culture.
So why did he need a black director? Could a white director not have?
It's not color, it's culture.
Explain the difference, because I think we're
Steven
in a space
Spielberg
right now.
Did Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Scorsese did Goodfellas, right? Steven Spielberg could direct Goodfellas. Martin Scorsese probably could have done a good job with Schindler's List, but they're cultural differences. You know, I know, you know, we all know what it is when a hot comb hits your hair on a Sunday morning, mm-hmm. what it smells like. Huh? That's a cultural difference, not just a color difference.
All right.
So it's a culture.
You know about a hot comb? So now
she don't know about no hot comb.
Because that's old school.
You don't know nothing about
Dax?
See how everybody laughed? That's a cultural difference. Yeah. That's not a race difference. That's just that motion. That's all I gotta say, right?
And when I heard this, this is one of the things that I was literally fist pumping my ass off just hearing this. And it was only like a 30-40 second clip, but he explained it so well and eloquently that I think that anyone who has questions about that can really understand a lot from that snip. But me being me, I definitely had to talk about it and break it down. So first of all, his explanation of The Culture, do you agree with it? Anything else you want to expound on or add to it? What do you think about it? The clip will play right before we talk about this, so everyone will have heard the clip, but what were your thoughts on it?
I thought that he hit the nail on the head, because it's something that people they try to get, but they can't get. Like, if you're not black, certain things you're just not gonna understand. But I feel that way about every culture, but the black culture within itself, there are things that we do that it's a feel. You can't write it out and try to like map out how it's going to play out. You can't talk about it and be like, no, yeah, definitely, you know, feel where you come. No, you don't feel it unless you know it. And in order for you to know it, you got to be black. He said it to the T. Like, there was no better way to explain that.
And I think it's important. Like, it's you can know what is the culture, but you can't understand what's like being embraced in it without experiencing the culture itself. Like, you have to live in it. You have to embrace it. You have to be amongst it. And it's, and I think it's important to know that people need to know that those things do exist and they are representative of our culture. Yeah. But you can only go so far by understanding it, by just seeing it. Yeah. And that kind of brings me into the discussion topic that I want to have with you on this, is how can allies toe the line between appreciating but not imitate our culture? What do you feel about that?
Mind your manners. I think that that's like the biggest thing. Like, there are certain things that as Black people, we just don't do because we know that it's not for us. Like, it's mm-hmm. not something that one would even look right. It's not something that would feel right, like, to us. And it's just something that even, like, so even in growing up, there's a certain level that your parents and whoever raised you won't let you get to. Like, certain things you might want to do with your hair, certain clothes you might wear, certain things you might even want to eat. It's just like, no, like, that's not what we do. I think that with allies, sometimes it becomes a matter of trying to be empathetic, mm-hmm. where it just kind of comes off as you're doing too much. Like, the whole cornrow situation, like, when people were getting their hair cornrow, I'm just like, and then they were calling them just like back braids, you know, like to the back braids, or when people started tanning to be darker, and they were just kind of like, you know, there were just little jokes around it, not necessarily like melanin popping jokes, but that's something that we did. Like, our melanin is popping, and for so long we didn't have a chance to kind of like claim it as something that we were necessarily proud of. Mm-hmm. So when that took on, it's like all of a sudden you see people like tanning dark, and it's like, oh, well, my friends are Black, so it's like, no, sis, I don't care what you thought, that's not okay. Even the whole idea of like soul food, like Kylie Jenner at one point, and the only reason why I really bring them up is because it seems like they're at the back of everything. Mm-hmm. They did like Thanksgiving dinner one year, and they were doing like fried chicken and macaroni and cheese, but they were trying to play it off as if it was like something that like our granny would have made. You can't do it. It's not in you. Like, it, in order for you to be able to understand it, come to dinner with us and enjoy those moments, kick it with us in those moments. Don't go home and then try to recreate that dinner as something like that's your own. It's us, it's ours, and give us credit when credit is due. Like, if you didn't do it, don't try to claim it. Like, there's only one Black, like, seriously Black culture. And when we do it so well. Just mind your damn business. Like, what you got is what you got. Like, what's for you is what's for you. We don't, and there's not too much that we have anymore. So it's just like, let us keep what we can keep. Our music, our dance moves, our things like, you can definitely do it with this. Spider-Man, recently, I saw it on Twitter the other day, yeah. Like, how they had that, like, you know, he didn't come in like, yeah, you know, I'm killing it. Like, yeah, that's my, it wasn't that. He just literally was dancing and he was having a good time with his Black friend. He didn't attempt to do too much with it. It was like, yeah, it's my nigga. It's like, no, like, bruh, he's right there at the line. And I think that those are other means. And never in your life, and this is just advice from me to anybody who is not Black, stop saying, well, I have Black friends. That
has to stop being the defense. Like, like, that is such an idiotic defense, and I take such a problem with that when someone tries to not even, it's, and they use it when it's not even like racism. Like, if you call someone mm-hmm. out and it's like, you don't really understand, it's like, well, I have five friends that are Black. All right, that still doesn't mean that you exactly. understand it. I look at it this way. I look at the culture as it being like, when you're invited to someone's house, you get to experience and kind of that how that family lives, but you still have to respect that family's rules.
Exactly.
That's what it is. Stop appropriating our culture and respect it. If we welcome you in, and that's the thing too, we kind of shun out people because we are easy to weed out the ones who are honest and ones who are doing it because it just looks cool to them. But mm-hmm. if you are truly pay respect to the culture, and we talk about this on the Breaks Radio with hip hop too, like, if you pay respect to it, then we welcome you in with open arms. Like, that's right. not an issue. Like, it can be all inclusive, but you have to pay respect and realize where these things are coming from. And I think, like, when you get the thing, and I know there was like a meme going around of the white woman who was doing, damn, what was the dance? Was it the,
I don't know. What the hell was that?
I can't even remember.
It wasn't Drake's thing.
No, it was, I can't remember. But when the way that she was just explaining, like, you just smack the air, and it's like, all right, listen, Don't get me wrong.
Billy Rockets.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there are white people who can dance their ass off. Justin Timberlake held it down for the blue-eyed soul for quite a while. but if you're going to do that, pay respect to it. Don't try to do it to capitalize off what's popular. And that's what starts becoming an issue, I think, in the community, when people try to infiltrate just because it's the end thing to do. And as hip-hop, as... like, really, when you look at everything, you see the influence of black people even more so than almost any other time in history. Yeah. It put forward in like the public eye on TV. Like, yeah, it's so much. Our hands are on everything. And that's part of because we helped build this damn country. But that's a podcast topic for another day. But you see that imprint in so many different things, in TV, in music, in film. And it's starting to get to a place now where now it's like it's the cool thing to try to be, quote unquote, black. And the thing is that just respect it. Like, please just respect the culture. Because
it's not a trend. It's even when you think that it's not cool to be black anymore, we still have to be black.
Yeah.
So you can't. You can do it for as long as you want to do it. It's that at the end of the day, I can't take this off. This is me 24/7, 365. So you get the opportunity to, you know, take your hair out, press it out, and, you know, go back to being whoever you are. I can take my braids out. My hair's still kinky. I can flat iron it. It's still going to be this thick, coarse hair. Like, I can't run from this. So if, let's say, one day, everything that we're doing now, because let's be honest, black people are popping. At one point, if this no longer becomes a popularity contest to them anymore, we still have to walk around as who we are. So you guys get the liberty to go about your day and become whoever you want to be again. I'm not a trend. This is me in me being genuine. Like, this is me genuinely. I can't take this off. And I do it unapologetically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, too, that I have an interesting perspective on it, because as many of our listeners knows that I grew up overseas. So I was the guy who got thrown in and had to embrace other cultures while still being me and still learning and about, like, my family and everything, and my dad being white. Like, I have so much going on, but I'm still very much me, and I'm still very much representative of our culture. But the thing is that I think me having those experiences growing up makes me kind of hold on to our culture a little bit more. And I don't want to be a gatekeeper. Like, I try to stick away from doing that. But at the same time, it's like, listen, if you only knew, like, for me to be in situations to where I'm judged as a black man, and then when my father walks in the room, I see people's faces change and the way that they treat me change, or like, I saw that. I had a growth experience in that. So when people try to tell me that there is no difference, or like racism doesn't exist, I have to fight myself from choking the shit out of people, because I experienced that. Like, there has been so many situations in which, like, I'm when I was in ROTC, for example, my master sergeant hated my ass. My dad showed up. He was deployed when I first joined ROTC. My dad showed up to a drill we had, and he met my master sergeant, and he saw that my dad was white. Completely treated me differently after the fact. I didn't do a single push-up after that point. And it was just like, all right, I see what you're doing. Right. So, like, we have to understand that. And I think that that's part of the culture also, that they will never, you can imitate all day because it's the cool thing to do. But until you get pulled over for being black, you will never, no matter how much of an ally you are, will fully understand that. And that's where it's important to be able to realize that you can be sympathetic and you can be empathetic as well to what we have going on. But you still have to realize that you will never truly understand what it's like to live this life every day. So, I know we dropped some bars there. Let's bring it back in. Let's get to the next kind of bullet point that we had today. So this next one, still staying on the culture, is, do you agree that the way black culture is depicted in TV and film has improved in recent years?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I use, like, old black sitcoms as the perfect example. Like, Good Times, black people aren't always broke. Like, yeah, that we're not always struggling. We don't always have, no, it's something that we can relate to. It's something that you could talk to your great great aunt about all day long. But it wasn't always hard. You know, it wasn't always, we didn't always struggle. And there was no reason for us to have to be depicted as that. There was a series that was based out of Baltimore. And I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. So sometimes I'll watch that show. And then I look at like what kind of goes on now or what's depicted in like different things, especially dealing with our community here. And it is, it's a big difference. We're not this destitute group of people. Like we have personality, we have talent. So to see things like Black Panther, when Black Panther came out, that was like big to me, because it wasn't just he was a superhero, like his sister was like the head of their IT department. She handled all their technology. To watch the different things that are just happening overall within our culture, just as human beings, like Will Smith being casted as Genie, like we're having more of an opportunity because people more so understand our talent. Mm-hmm. And then they also kind of better understand that there's so much more to us. Like Jaden Smith, granted, he was, you know, the little boy in the Karate Kid or whatever the case may be. But I look at him now and like his amount of talent, who he is as an individual, how he's depicted and how he's received by so many different kids. That's big to me. Just overall, especially like artists, like rappers, it's not the same. I wish, to be honest, it was kind of like the Run DMC era where it was just storytelling. But even in that, it's not all about like drug dealing and gang banging anymore. There's a line there where there's still intellect. Yeah. Because sometimes we're looked at as such like ratchet individuals. We're not all, you know, city girls. Like Megan Thee Stallion is maybe a perfect example for that. She looks one way, but when you know like the background of her, she's also something else. So she's definitely somebody that when you look at it, you're like, oh damn, was she twerking on stage? You know, she talking about hot girls. I'm like, but she has a whole degree. Like she's out here cleaning beaches and whatnot. So we're depicted. It's a lot better now. And I'm a lot more comfortable with seeing it.
Yeah. And I think like it's important to point out, while it may seem like a small blip, but things like having that scene of Annalise and Olivia Pope getting their hair done, just talking business, and yeah, they had the little cattiness, but to see the Black women amongst like their hairdressers just talking about life, like that is our culture. Like that every Black woman has been in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. and to put it up there to where it's not played for laughs, it's not played to exploit, it's really played to just say, hey, this is normal. We're not making a big deal out of it. It's important. And I think like with the rise of prominent Black directors like Shonda Rhimes, Ava DuVernay, Ryan Coogler, like as they keep gaining more and more status, you're seeing more and more respect put into it. Yep. And, you know, Lethann Waite, Aletha Waite, I always pronounce her name wrong unless I'm looking at it. But like when she made her comments that I talked about a couple weeks ago with the lack of funding for independent Black film, it's like I understand it. But still, she has that platform because people want to see the Black culture through her eyes. And yeah, we can talk about independent Black film all day, but at the end of the day, we're almost sidestepping the independent Black film thing to a degree, because Netflix is releasing Black after what? Black after Black after what? Black. And it's so funny because in 2017, I believe on an episode of this podcast, I talked about the lack of representation of Black people on Netflix. Since then, it's like I couldn't even, if I wanted to try to pick it apart, I couldn't. Like, first of all, they've almost got a permanent pass released the next year because of when they see us. Like, just be 100% hell honest. Yeah. Not even counting Marlon's show. His film that he did, what was it, Naked, when he was in the elevator or whatever. Yep. Like their representation and what they're showing, Beats, like I can keep naming all in all.
What Dear White People came out, yeah. I just finished that series alone. It pays homage to the idea that one, all Black people don't go to HBCU,
yep,
and two, that we can excel in the Ivy League. That's my show. Like next season comes out like August 20th or something. I'm hooked for the next couple of weeks.
And another thing that I wanted to talk, I know I didn't like put this on the topic because I know you can fly with it, but like I love now too the varying degree and shades that Black people are. Like it used to be that Dorothy Dandridge, like you had to be that shade, maybe a little bit darker, to be a Black woman and really excel in this industry. And now like when you just look, you're seeing like why am I skipping on her name right now? From us,
Lupita Nyong'o.
Lupita, first of all,
bomb. What melanin popping?
For anyone was to say Lupita is not one of the most gorgeous people in the world, crazy. You'd be crazy.
Crazy.
But like, just to see like her rise as well, like it's first of all, to have her and Angela Bassett in Black Panther is like, that's kind of like it's generational. Like when you look at it, like I really honestly think Lupita, when it's all said and done 10 years from now, is going to be like what we look at as a flag bearer for our people. Like she's amazing. And it's just good to see. It's good to see that no matter what, it's not about shade, it's not about any of that. It's really, we are popping and you can't deny this.
Melanin.
So that brings us to our next topic, which anyone who knows me knows I have stopped responding on Twitter because I was ready to have this conversation here. Little Mermaid, that casting came out, what was it, Tuesday or Wednesday, of Hal Bailey being cast as the Little Mermaid. Instantly, the backlash started.
And I'm for it.
Can he envision the character to be what? Look, that's a stretch, I know. Denmark in the 1800s? That's just a guess there. I'm not sure. That's just a guess. Okay. So let's see who they've cast for the live-action version of the Little Mermaid. Here we go. There it is. That is who they've cast. Singer-actress Halle Bailey, part of the R&B duo Chloe and Halle, has nabbed the starring role of Ariel in Disney's live-action remake of The Little Mermaid. Let's blow that up a bit. You can see that. So look, there seems to be a big difference there. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure. Oh, that's it. Yep, I can tell now. Halle is wearing some type of earring there, whereas Ariel is not. That's the only difference I can see. But that's perfect casting. And look, nothing against Halle Bailey there. Nothing against her at all. We're talking about the casting here. And do people have a right to be upset that she looks nothing like the character they grew up with? And I think they do. But you know the usual calls that are going out now. Anyone who disagrees with this, you know what they're called. You know what they're called. They're called a racist because they don't, or a bigot, just because they want the character to look like what it originally looked.
Distribution list for press. And so I had got the email just as it broke in my inbox. And I stared at it and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that is who they casted as Ariel.
Yeah, first of all, redheads worldwide only make 1-2% of the population. Red hair, blue eyed gingers are the rarest. And Ariel had red hair and blue eyes. And there's a reason for this, which I'll get into in a bit.
Yep.
But it just seems to me there is a trend to ruin redheads, and you keep taking them and making them into other...
Why did they make Ariel black? I'm not racist, but why the heck will they make her black if she is white in the original film? Blackwashing is as bad as whitewashing.
Wait a minute, what? The Little Mermaid is black now? Wow.
So the whole, not my Little Mermaid, I want to see the real depiction of Little Mermaid. Listen.
I'm for it. I want to argue all day.
So this segment is quote unquote titled "White People Be Tripping," because that's all I can really categorize this one as. Well, first of all, I want to ask you. Let's talk about the positive first. Her being cast as the Little Mermaid. What do you think about it?
It's a beautiful thing. The last time I saw a black princess was Brandy, and that was like 97. So you look at, okay, so Princess Tiana, if you're thinking about animated characters, mm-hmm. but we're talking about live action because she was casted as the live action Ariel. The last time we saw a princess was Brandy when she played that in Cinderella, and that was 97. So we're talking, what, it's been a hot minute. We don't have that. Like, as a little girl, you grow up, and we didn't even pay attention to race, to be honest, until you get to a certain point where you realize that everybody is all the same shade. You're like, hold up, this doesn't look right. Not that it doesn't look right, but they don't look like me. So granted, I could put this dress on all day long, and I could put on the shoes, and I could put on the makeup or whatever the case may be, but she still doesn't look like me. This young woman is coming into this role looking like a black woman, that gives me so much more, not just comfort, but so much more confidence in the fact as though it's possible. Now, granted, she's a mermaid, so she's a mythical creature, people, but it gives me hope. Like, listen, if Ariel can have, because she had, I don't know if everybody's seen the picture, she has red dreadlocks. Like,
yes, I was just about to talk about that.
It doesn't get any better than that. Like, listen, she's getting ready to kill this role. She's talented. She's overly qualified for it. She's getting ready to get it. She's getting ready to sing her heart out. And she's getting ready to do what she does best, and that is be this young woman. She's on Grown-ish. Even then, she kills it in what she does. She guest starred on Dear White People. She killed it on that. She sings like no other. You listen, this is probably one of the best things Disney has ever done. I don't care why they did it. I don't care who was in the meeting. I just know whoever brought it up. That man needs a raise. That man or woman needs a raise.
Yeah, and I think that it's important. It says a lot about Disney, who also did Black Panther, but that they casted someone who was best for the role and then probably looked at the color later. I love the fact that she dyed her dreads red, because beautiful. Just embrace that. But Little Mermaid, what her voice is supposed to completely enchant a man, and she has that voice, and her energy. Beautiful. Like I've never been in the same room as her, clearly, but even like she has like this air of just epicness. Is that even a word?
Yeah,
like
no,
it's
right,
it's ethereal. Like, it's honestly like there's something about her, and her being cast as this role is perfect. And I think that the backlash from it, Disney doesn't care about your backlash. And when people don't understand, when they talk about Not My Little Mermaid, I think they don't understand the importance of representation in movies like this, because they're white. They have representation in almost every film or everything that they see. But for little black girls like my daughters to be able to say, to dress up as a Disney princess and it be someone who was a black Disney princess is important. And I don't think that they really understand that, because again, that's part of that baked in white privilege that people don't realize that is a privilege, because you can look and see somebody that you identify as easily. Just turn on the TV. We're starting to get that. Yes, but it's important. And you know, I mean, fuck how you feel.
I think that one thing that really at least when I think about it, because she's actually somebody that I've been following since her and her sister had a YouTube channel. I love them. And when I think of Ariel as a person, like, you have to think of the characteristics of Ariel. She's this bright, bubbly individual. Mm-hmm. She's charismatic. She is so optimistic. She's a dreamer. She wants so much more out of life other than to be, you know, held up in her, you know, who's a what's it's and her thingamajiggies. When you think about that, to be honest, I can't think of anybody else who would have played this part better than her, because she has that smile. Her eyes are so bright. Mm-hmm. She has this really, every time she's being interviewed, she just has this air about her. And when I think of her being in this like aquatic state and her singing and thinking about what all the lyrics are, I can't, now that Disney has put two and two together, it makes four to me. Like, that, I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm getting ready to get me an Ariel with black t-shirt just to piss some people off.
And let's not forget, I mean, her crab is a Caribbean person. So it's definitely.
Exactly. Like, so, and somebody actually made a good point. I think it was actually on Twitter. And of course, you have to do the research behind it to make sure that what they're saying is valid. I believe that the actual ocean that they're saying that it was, like, you know, filmed, it was definitely like off of the shores of the island. So if anything, Ariel probably should have been black.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at the I forgot the year that Little Mermaid came out, but the everybody was white. Like, let's just be honest. So, like, even if that was supposed to, if that ocean was supposed to be based off the Caribbean or off the islands, like, they wouldn't have drawn them black anyway back then. They just wouldn't have. It wouldn't have hit. Like, people would have almost completely backlashed about it. Now, my thing is, too, is that where I have a problem is that everybody was fine when the conversation was about Ursula being cast as a black woman. Really?
Because Ursula is this grumpy woman.
Exactly. And because Ursula is depicted as this woman with what could kind of be looked at as makeup, and she had the soulful type of singing rhythm, Ursula was based off a drag queen. So we're okay with that being depicted by a black woman, but you're not okay with a mermaid being depicted by a black woman. The dark, quote unquote, octopus woman who's evil can be black all day, but our, you know, our heroine can't be. Like, come on now, let's get it together, people.
I think that it's I call BS on that a lot, because I feel like when people think of when people think about a black woman, like, let's take what Ursula actually looks like out of the picture and just think of all that she entails. She's this sassy, selfish, overbearing, ostentatious woman. Why does that have to equate to somebody who's black? Why does that have to be the equal? Because in my mind, that could be any damn body.
Because people equate that with black women, which we'll get into the topic that we're going to talk about later. So let's not get into that a little bit too much now. But yeah, I hope people really just realize and check their feelings at the door. And all the hate now, they haven't even shot a scene. Once this trailer comes out, imagine what the hate's going to be like then. They're going to be trying to pick everything apart about this trailer. And you guys, listen, if not one single white person goes and see this movie, it's still going to do numbers. Yeah, so, you know, deal with it. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're actually going to get into a little bit deeper of a topic. And, Christian's going to kill this one. So we'll be right back after this.
Hey, guys, it's your girl, Beck Easy.
Hi, everybody. It's your girl, Joanne.
Hey, guys, it's Trell, and this is
The Team. And we want to welcome you into our group chat, where we talk any and everything, from ABCs of sex to finding your passion.
Catch us every other Tuesday on Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and YouTube.
Because we lit.
Take that. Damn.
All right. So, are you ready for this one? When you read this topic, when I sent it to you and you read this one, did the light bulb go off? Like,
it always goes off.
Did you frown a little bit? Because
Let's talk about it.
So the main point, the kind of overarching one of this topic is, are black women embraced enough for just being them?
No. And it's something that as a black woman, it's something that irritates my spirit, because I'm so much more than what people fake me out to be. I'm a black woman. On top of everything, because I am this spiritual being, my hair grows up towards the sun. The sun powers my skin. I'm dope as hell. Super intelligent. Bold, brash, I don't care. But I'm also this empathetic, sympathetic, nurturing, loving, caring individual. And there are a lot of black women who are just like me. So no, yes, I have an attitude every now and then. But it's after you provoke me. I don't walk around with an attitude all day long. My face is scrunched up because this is my face. Like, why do I have to smile all day long? But in the moments when I am smiling, you think I'm high off something, or it's a man doing it, or that, like, I just don't have a reason to be happy. Like, fuck, I woke up this morning. Like, I don't have any other reason other than be happy. We don't get the recognition that we deserve as just being black women. That's who we are, because no, who really knows who we are other than us? And then when they show us, or we're depicted as these people, we are either one of the two. We're either, like, you know, really peaceful and, you know, really like Mother Earth, or it's like, nah, like, we this, you know, angry auntie, or we're this angry mom. And I don't like that.
I called it this, is that black women are either usually categorized as being Madea or Erykah Badu. Like, there's no like, you either attitude or your natural hair and shea butter. Like, there's we take out the gray area, and well, not even the gray area. We take out all of the in between, and we try to boil down black women to just these attitude beings that care about their natural hair and their edges. And we can't even just blame that on white people. Us as black men do that too. So, like, when you hear the criticism of an attitude, of black women having this attitude, and you hear, like, some black men say, you know, I couldn't date a black woman because of the attitude, or I tried because of the attitude, now I'm dating white women. Like, how does that make you feel as a black woman?
Makes me feel like people don't try hard enough to get to know us as black women, and that we're cast solely by, like, either their first meeting of us. Like, it's in the introductory, you already have a pre-connotated notion of who you think I am. So you're not even taking the time to get to know me. And then when you do get to know me, it's like it's some kind of shock. And that in itself bothers me. Why are you surprised that I am this person? I think that, first of all, I am set aside from black women because I am something totally different, because I am them chakras. Like, that, it don't get no better. I am Madea and Erykah Badu encompassed into one. Like, that's who I am. But I feel like that's a lot of black women in general. It's kind of like we have to choose sometimes. In the whole instance of black men not dating black women because we have attitude, you got to think about why we have attitudes. Like, So we got to carry a lot. We carry a lot on our shoulders. We carry a lot on our backs. We carry a lot on our hearts and in our heads. Within our womb, there's so much that goes on with us. There are going to be times where we have these attitudes, but we have to fight for so much recognition. We have to fight to be loved. We have to fight to deserve. And it should just be things that are gifted to us based off of who we are, like talent, beings. And I call BS on it a lot, because when at any point are you guys, or not you guys, but in general, when are people going to start seeing us for who we are as individuals instead of looking at us for who we are depicted as? We don't get the opportunity to have that because people already, again, have this pre-connotated notion of who we are. And I personally don't know how to shake that, because I'm going to be who I am just off rip. And I think every Black woman is that. It's just that at a point, sometimes you just get tired of like fighting with it and just being like, all right, well, however you feel is how you feel, but that's not going to change me. I'm just going to rock with me.
So when you see things like Black women judge for their attitude, but when it's a Latina woman, she's looked at as being passionate, and Black men love that. And your face says it all. Like, what is that? Because I think this conversation that I wanted to have is as much as a learning opportunity, because that's nothing that I can ever speak to as a Black man. So when you see you guys knocked down for the attitude, but even another melanated race with Latina women being kind of appreciated for their fiery attitude, what do you think about that?
It bothers me, because people don't even look at the reason why we have an attitude. I can say that there are probably top three reasons why a Black woman has an attitude. She either had to fix something that, to be honest, could have been done had somebody had just taken the time and attention towards it. She's really passionate about it. It's something that she truly loves, whether it be her child, whether it be her man, her family, her job, whatever the case may be. Or three, that's who she is. She is this being of just, there's something in her that she has not yet healed from. So she's angry at the moment. It bothers me because we are passionate people. We're empathetic individuals because that's who we are. We are who bore this nation to be what it is. We have taken on the responsibility of getting people to where they are. I don't have an attitude. I am passionate about it. So the twang in my voice, the bass that comes from this, is because if I talk like this, but you don't get it. You don't understand. I've got to roll my eyes. I have to kind of put the sass behind it, because at no point do you take, we're the most, and you said it yourself, we are the most underappreciated species on this earth. So without this type of passion that I have here, you're not going to get it. It's not going to resolve in you. It's not going to sink deep down into you. If I'm talking to you like this, it's going in one ear and out the other. When I put some bass in my voice and show you that I'm not to play with, all of a sudden you're like, oh damn, now the Black chick is talking. Now I need to listen. It shouldn't take all that, but it takes all that. I don't know why Latino women get the pass that they do. And to be honest, I'm not concerned with that, because I'm not Latino. That don't have nothing to do with me. What I know is that here in this time and who I am, when I'm talking, you're going to listen, because I have that much love behind it. I'm not talking to you for any reason. Black women, we don't talk just to talk. We're talking because there's some type of purpose behind it. We're saying something for a reason. So either I talk like this and you don't get it, or I put the bass behind it in order for you to get it into your ear so that it sinks within your spirit, so that it resonates through you, so that you realize that I'm not just talking. I mean what I say.
Damn. Okay. Well, shit. I think you just laid it all out there.
And that's what it is.
So like, okay. So here's kind of what I want to piggyback off that. So when you, what can, without like us judging or whatever, what can we do as Black men, as white men who want to do it, as just people in general, to break this stigma that is the Black woman? What can we do?
When I'm talking, I need you to hear me, which means that in the middle of me talking, if you don't understand something, like put a pin in it. But then ask me about it afterwards, and don't just assume it's because I had an attitude. Or if I say something to you, let me know, hey, so I hear what you say. I'm just trying to make sure that I understand it. Comprehend what I'm saying. The comprehension behind it is lost. People have started to respect it more. That's fine. But people are not comprehending what I'm saying. And I'm saying it for a reason. So just get me. And if you don't get me, ask so that I can further define myself. And after I've said it, let's say somebody comes to you like, damn, she got an attitude. It's like, no, she doesn't have an attitude. This is what she's saying. This is why she feels the way that it does. Because you guys have a certain type of presence and a certain level of respect that comes with you all just from being men. Mm-hmm. So in supporting us, comprehending what we're saying, and then being that backbone for when we're not allowed to have one, will assist in other people respecting us when it comes out the way that it does.
That's awesome. So as a Black woman who's like in this creative space now, as your platform continues to grow and everything, who are some of the peers that you look at that you see that are being respected in this industry? And I think that Empress Nick recently talked about it on an episode of Keeping It 100, how like her trying to get the pod connection together, she kind of sees men not take it as seriously because it's just a woman doing it and not a man being there with her. Do you run into any of those obstacles? And then, like I said, who are some of the peers or people that you look at that you're like, all right, this is who I'm going to take some inspiration from?
I definitely run into it because I'm new at this. I'm also young. So when people look at it as I'm this young Black girl with just a lot to say. But I also have a certain amount of power behind my voice and I mean what I say and I'm unapologetic about it. So I don't really run into too much because again, I mean what I say. So I'm not backing down from that. The host of Love, Less, and Badass. So AJ, I take a lot from her because she has such a presence about her. Mm-hmm. When she speaks, first of all, she has one of the most sultry voices I've ever heard in my life. I compare her voice to like a cup of cognac, like a really good glass of cognac.
Oh, so she needs to get into like audio books or something. Like she needs to get into something, yeah.
She is so smooth. I definitely take from her in a matter of her overall presence. Mm. I think that that's important. Other females, I take from the team a lot, just their overall. Ooh.
Yeah, those are my people. The team, and I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
But I can't say enough about how happy I am that the team are a part of the Breaks Media, but also that we have that representation, because I honestly feel like the team is the perfect podcast. Mm-hmm. Like not even just for women. I mean, generally, they are the perfect podcast. And I really look and respect them a lot. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I take from them just because of their professionalism and the way that they carry things. They definitely talk about all different types of things. It's just the way that it comes across. It's not like ratchet at all. Like it's a certain level before it goes too far, mm-hmm. which I really respect about them. And they just have a certain ladylike appeal about them that I really appreciate. I take from my best friend a lot, Kiara, because she just no holds bar and she says whatever's on her mind and she doesn't care if it's censored. And I really appreciate that from a female aspect. I take from you a lot just from the conversations that we have. You've been a huge help. And then just a better understanding podcasting in general, because this is very new to me. BJ, I take from BJ a lot because you challenge the conversation a lot, but BJ challenges the conversation. Like this man can take something that you said and flip it back to you and be like, so what I'm hearing is you're saying this. So it's got to stem from this. And it's like, bruh, I didn't ask you to like run my life past me right now, but you get it. So I'm going to feed past it. And that is my kindred spirit. Like that was my brother in a past life. I don't know where we fought together, but I know that like that's somebody who I truly respect and I hold to a high regard. There's actually a podcast out of Baltimore called Throw the Whole Podcast Away. I take from them and just being from Baltimore, like sometimes the terminology that I use, mm-hmm. I know that some people might not get, but that's who I am. Like I'm Baltimore. So I'm okay with that. So I take from them. And then just the more that I start to listen to podcasts, the more I start to take from it. Every podcast that I listen to, I learn from. But those are just kind of like the top ones that when I take it, I'm actually writing notes and I'm feeding from it so that I can better feed into myself in order to be better at this.
Okay. That's what's up. So another thing that I want to talk about kind of on this topic of Black women being embraced, with you doing all the things, the motivational things and everything that you're doing, give me, if you have one, an example of when you face backlash from a man who kind of more so you could tell that it was just the fact that a woman was saying something to him or giving that advice more so than it was the advice itself.
I have a follower on Instagram. I post motivational minutes every morning. And recently I was talking about the fact that you can support a person through the rising action of their life, through the climax, and then through the falling action until they get to the resolution. But there are times where a person is at the rising action, will get to the climax, and then get back down to the rising action and stay in that same setting because they don't want to put the work in. This man was so adamant on being like, well, you don't even have like 1,000 followers, sis. So like, what are you talking about? Or, you know, like, how can you tell me how much work I'm putting in if you don't see me, you know, fully to the end? You don't know my struggle, you know? And it's like, first of all, sir, you got to understand that I'm not here to judge anybody, but two, I can tell when a person is working to their full potential. And I know that it was different coming from me because this man will post all day long about a man saying the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. You got to put the work in, you got to push, you got to do this, you got to do that. So it was because it was coming from me and because he doesn't see me in a certain position that I guess can be respected. He took it a certain type of way. Never, I'm never disrespectful about it, but I'm definitely going to tell you about yourself. I am who I am for a reason, and I'm in the position that I'm in for a reason, and I don't care about a follower count. I don't care about those matters. I know that when a person puts the work in, it shows, and I can only say what I'm going to say, and the reason why I say it the way that I do is because I'm held to a certain regard in this. I know what it's like to not work hard for something. So I had to kind of give him my life lesson within like 5 minutes of conversation for him to understand like any other man can tell you that you're not putting the work in and that you respect it. For me as a Black woman to tell you that you're not putting enough work in really should be something that you pay a bit more attention to, because that Black man might only be holding you to a certain standard. When me as a woman to see that you're not putting that amount of work in might mean that you might never be ready to be in the position that you're searching for. Cause I see a lot with him. So I had to kind of bring him back down for a second, cause he put himself on a pedestal that he did not deserve.
Okay. That's what's up. And I love the fact that you were able to put him in that place with still being respectful.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that messes people up heads even more because they expect for you to kind of clap back. But when you give it to them in a still respectful manner, it's like, all right, I ain't got nothing to say. Let me just shut up.
And that's what it is.
And so that brings me to the very last thing that I want to talk to you about is how do you think a Black woman can be everything that she is? So whether that be intellectual, sexual, motivational, prideful, have self-doubt, have insecurities, but still remain ladylike. What do you think goes into that?
Understanding each part of you and knowing that all encompass makes you you. So I think that sometimes we find that there's a standard of a Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that we try to meet that standard, not understanding that that's just a stepping stone. Like a Black woman, the only thing she has to be is Black and a woman. Everything else just kind of comes as it is. So I think that you have to understand that there are different series of us and that there are different genres of a woman, but in that all encompass makes us this encyclopedia, and that there's so much within us that you can learn and take from and gain, that it's okay to be all of that. So I think just being that unapologetic is what makes it the most beneficial to be a Black woman. Like, benefit from knowing that you are who you are and that this is all you can be. And being Black is just an added portion of that. Like, being Black is amazing, but to be Black and sexual, to be Black and intellectual, to be Black and like, that's the gold to the gold. So to just be that and just understand that you are who you are for a reason, and just love you, live you, and life you just overall.
And so you would say that it's important for anybody, but I know we're kind of, and the thing is too, is I want to keep this focus because it's easy to turn the conversation and just say anybody should, but this is to uplift Black women. So we're going to stay focused on our sisters here. Yeah. So it's important for Black women to embrace every side of them. I need those words to come out of your mouth, because I think people need to hear that.
Be who you be. And that is something that I tell people, and it's grammatically incorrect, but it's be who you be. I can tell you all day long who I am, and who I am means that this is who I am at this point, which means this could change at any time. Who I be means that this is permanent. I be this, nothing is going to change. When I wake up in the morning, this is who I am. At no point in your life should you ever change who you are, other than the fact as though you decide to change who you are. But when you wake up every morning and you know that you are to a certain standard that you are comfortable with, never change that for anybody. Live you unapologetically, because in you is something special and nobody can be you better than you. So when you wake up in the morning and your hair is kinky, when you wake up in the morning and your breasts are, you know, fuller than any other woman, when your hips are wider, when you're feeling like your waist beads, I wake up every morning, my waist beads are tangled, my hair is a little bit nappy, got a little bit of droop, but this is who I am. I am this Black woman and this is who I be. And I'm not changing that for any, not a man, not my child, because I'm no good to these people until I'm good to myself. And in order for me to understand me being good to myself, I have to understand my strength, and my strength starts at my foundation. And in being a Black woman, the first foundation that we have is that we come from other Black women. So be who you be. Know your lineage. Know that that's who you are. Be who you be and get in touch with you. And know that overall, it is okay to be you. It's okay to have your attitude. It's okay to have that twang. It's okay to have that walk, that talk. It's okay to have your hair kinky. It's not unprofessional, sis. Be who you be and be you unapologetically.
Woo!
Point blank, period.
Woo! That's it. The mic's on fire. We're done for the day. That's it. Christian, I want to thank you. I honestly, no hyperbole, no cap. This is probably one of the best conversations to ever happen on The Awakened Soul. And I want to thank you for being able to have this with me. I want to thank you for showing up. I want to just thank you for just being here, being able to talk about these things and not being afraid, holding back at all. So thank you.
Not never. I appreciate you, King, for who you are and everything that you do for the culture, because you make shit shake.
I try. I do what I can do when I can do it. You know how that goes. But tell the people where they can find you so they can get their motivational minutes, where they can get their chakras aligned, and they can also get some shit talk. So go ahead and tell the people where they can find you.
Listen, every Monday and Wednesday at 7:30, you can catch me with Kiara J. Monet on Periscope, which is BF Talking Shit 1, and then on YouTube at Best Friends Talking Shit. Every Monday is something more so like emotional, but every Wednesday is something sex positive. You're either going to learn something or we're going to make you real uncomfortable. And then you can catch me every morning on Twitter or Instagram for your motivational minute at Dem Chakras. DMCHAKRAS. And they're both podcasts as well. So Best Friends Talking Shit and then Dem Chakras. And if you need your chakras aligned, you just got to DM me, because I got to figure out what's going on with you first to figure out what's hyperactive or hypoactive. But we could get you together.
All right. That's it. That's been another episode of The Awakened Soul in the Bag. This week, you guys can also check me out on Change the Subject podcast coming up Tuesday, depending on when you listen to this. You can also check me out on my Life Be Like podcast with my good friend Colin Wysong there. And then also I'm on CEO Talks. So go ahead and check that out. So that's a lot of haze on top of what I already do each and every week this week. But each podcast is covering different topics. So definitely go and check that out. Check out my appearances there. But that's it. You guys, again, can follow me at CEO Hayes. That's CEOHAIZE. You can follow the podcast at Awaken Soul Pod. And make sure you go to thebreaksmedianetwork.com, where you can find this podcast as well as others. And our merch store is finally up. We'll be adding more and more merch as we go along. But that's it. This has been another episode of The Awakened Soul. Peace.
The new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People were sussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters are God thumb, hardcore hustling. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears prick, seeking what will transmit. The scribes can apply the transcript. Yo. This ain't no time where the usual is suitable. Tonight alive, let's describe the inscrutable, the indisputable. We New York, the narcotics, Drake, the metal and fiber optics. We're mercenary. Is paid to trade hot stocks in for profits. Thirsty criminals dig pockets. Hard knuckles on the second hands of working class watches. Skyscrapers is colossus. The cost of living is preposterous. Stay alive, you pay or die, no options. No Batman and Robin. Can't tell between the cops and the robbers. They both partners, they all heartless. With no conscience, back streets stay darkened. We're unbelievable.